Welcome to BizArt, a podcast of the odd, the art and the rest. Any questions or comments, email bizartcast@gmail.com. That's bizartcast@gmail.com. Right, I'm Madeleine Swan. I write weird and strange stories. And this is Stephen Waring.
Hello.
And you can find his weird brain at Cosmic Arts Limited. Stephen's Art Jollies.
Stephen's Art Jollies.
Boop, 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 boop. We ought to do that cheesy hello that they do on daytime TV when they act all surprised that you're there, like you've just turned up on their doorstep.
Hello.
An entire audience, like, just arrived on the doorstep. Hello, come in, would you like some Garibaldis?
Oh, hi, didn't see you there.
I didn't see you come in.
Yes, well, this week on Stephen's Art Jollies, we're going to be talking about the KLF burning £1 million.
Yes.
No, back in, what was it, late 80s, early 90s? Early 90s, I think it was early 90s,
yeah.
KLF were...
Can I just point out that we have a very special guest in today?
Oh, we do.
You can't hear her, but I promise I'm not lying and I'm not imagining it. But I have a cat on my lap, which belongs to one of Steve's neighbours that she likes to come by when I'm here.
She thinks she owns the whole town, basically. She during the day when her...
She thinks she owns the whole town, but she doesn't own the whole town.
During the day when they're at work, she goes and sits in the estate agent down the road on a chair and won't let anyone get on it or turf her off of it. And she also has been known to go to the doctor's surgery, but they normally turf her out of there because...
I don't know, blooming cats. Anyway, continue.
Well, so they formed the K Foundation. KLF formed the K Foundation and moved into the arts world. And what they did initially was they gave a prize to the winner of the Turner Prize, calling it, I think it was the Worst Artist of the Year prize. And what they did is they stapled £20,000, I think, to the gates of the Tate Gallery, and the artist was asked to go and collect it. Now, thus, behind the KLF is Robert Anton Wilson and his books. Thought they'd move into the art world, which is notoriously more exclusive than it needs to be, I think. It can be quite stuffy elements to it.
Yeah.
Oh, well, the next thing they did, which I haven't explained, is they burnt £1 million of their own money.
The art almost came from how embittered they'd become in the future from the fact that they'd genuinely burnt £1 million that they'd made on their record. And they were just kind of looking back, and one of them said, you know, I have to wake up in the morning knowing that I burnt £1 million. And that's almost kind of where the art of that came from, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not absolutely sure embittered's the word, but yes, I think they knew before they did it that they would feel kind of different emotions.
It's hard to say what they definitely knew or didn't when they did it, because I think they might have been quite young at the time, and it's hard to say if they had sort of the foresight, but I think they may have had some idea that they wouldn't always be happy about it, but I don't know.
Yeah, they were in their 30s, weren't they? They did have small family, so it wasn't as if they had something to lose, but again, it's the whole ideal, the whole ethos is that Robert Anton Wilson kind of Discordia anarchist kind of linked philosophy. It really does make you think about the meaning of art and the money involved in the art world, and I think it kind of brought up ideas about what art is and how is there still such a thing as art when you're confined to what, say, their tastes, what they want or what they buy, you know? And is the only true art something which isn't tainted by any other outside forces like that or money?
I mean, it's hard to not be tainted by anything at all. I mean, you exist in the world, and what you do is going to be, like, however much you try not to be, you're going to be influenced by thinking, is so-and-so going to like this, are they going to like that? Like, not even necessarily anything that's going to give you money, but maybe even just your peers or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's whether you, whether there's an ego involved or not, I guess. No one's around to see it. Is it still art? Yeah, I think it is. I think maybe just the expression, the actual instant, the joy of creating something is the most important thing.
I think we're doing art pieces every day. Like when I get out of the bath and dance around with my towels and things, I think that that is a genius art piece.
Well, if you were to film that and put it in a gallery, like, what's the name of the guy who does the amazing video? Bill Viola, is it? Bill Viola does the amazing video. If you were to film that and then put it in a gallery, I guess it kind of, so who's to say that it has to be in a gallery? Why can't it just be in your head?
The joy of dancing with my towels in the bathroom. I think that's the best art that was ever made.
I think it was too.
Good. The three of us often talk about what counts as art and whether it needs any guidelines at all. And I've sometimes wondered if I could just paint myself green and run down the road crying or something. You know,
you could
that
do.
Art. Or if I did a wee on someone's doorstep and rang the bell and then ran away, I could definitely say that that's art, I think. Well, some people do that for free on a Friday night.
Yeah, they do. I know a few people who.
So you just say it's art. Next time you get really drunk and you've got to go to the toilet down an alleyway, if the police come along and say, oh, what are you doing? Wash that off. Just say, well, you know, this is an art piece. It's about my feelings of privatisation.
I think the closest thing I could think of that to this kind of anarchist philosophy is the Dada movement of the early 1900s. Marcel Duchamp, Max Ernst, and the gang. Marcel Duchamp
and the gang.
Urinal, you'll be very familiar with. Sorry, I'm digesting my dinner still, I think. My brain's not working too fast, but I'm trying my best. So, yeah, and the whole idea of self-censorship. Now, if you're creating something, you want to go the full hog. You want to take it as far as you can go, and you want to, you know, we were talking earlier about meditation before.
David Lynch does that,
and maybe that does clarify, that does clear the mind, that does change your perspective before you go and create something. And
I think you should try it for a week and tell me if it does. Tell us all if it does. You should try it too, listeners, and email us
at
yes, we've changed our email. It's now a...
But I mean, the whole thing about art is that it's kind of...
Oh, it's kind of big-eyed and weird.
It's kind of decadent, really. It's kind of something you do once you've got enough...
once all your other daily needs are taken care of, then you can start worrying about art, I suppose, if you're starving or... Well, I don't know, but I'm assuming if you're starving, you're not going to worry
too much
about...
You're going to be out...
Art.
Out throwing spears at wildebeest or something, rather than standing in a cave doing your cave. Cave painting probably happens after you've done
after
the spear.
After dinner.
You know,
yeah.
After you've had a nice steak and chips.
Maddie's creative curiosity. Like the little yodel at the end.
That's Slim Whitman.
I know that name. Where?
When I'm calling you.
Oh, the cat just looked up. I swear this cat is not in my head. She's really here.
It is. Figment of your imagination. I can't see it.
Yes, you can. Okay, anyway. For the next few weeks, I have decided to do some how-tos. I don't really know anything. I'm not an oracle. I'm just bumbling along, same as everybody else. But I might know something that you don't know, and in turn, you might know something that I don't know. So if you know anything that I don't know, not that I will know what it is, email and tell me. But anyway.
It sounded like the, what's his name? Donald Rumsfeld, then, with the unknown knowns, the knowns and unknown knowns. Carry on.
Anyway, here is some of the things that I know about getting your story published. Okay, you could go on duotrope.com. That's D for dog, UOTROPE. And you'll find all the different publications and markets out there for what you do. So just, pick the genre and it will come up with a load of magazines and so on. And also, I don't mean to self-publicise, but on my blog, I put together a list of small press publishers. So that's madeleineswan.wordpress.com. You might find that useful. I've got bizarro, erotica, horror, literary. I've tried to put lots of different ones on there. Another good idea, I reckon, is joining an online critiquing group. But just be aware, you don't have to do everything that they say, but be honest with yourself. If it chimes inside, then what they're saying could be right. The best advice I was given was if you have to read a sentence of yours twice, then it probably needs changing. And if you notice that plot hole, then everyone else is going to as well. There are some free ones. There's Critique Circle, Scribophile. Writing.com is apparently a good place to find a critique buddy, so it says. And
Whoa, that sound. Sorry, that sounds exciting, isn't it? A critique buddy. Oh, we're critique
This
buddies.
is my
Nothing
critique buddy.
serious.
This is my critique buddy. You're not invited. We're going to have a critiquing tea party, but you can't come because you're not a critique.
No.
Yeah. And Chris's workshop is for serious sci-fi, fantasy, and horror writers as opposed to silly ones. Like,
Critters.
it's called Critter's Workshop. Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, like the thing lying on me right now. Yes. And also, don't give up because there are some very strange books out there, as I have discovered. If you look to Bizarro, which is a sort of mutant fantasy horror genre, there's titles like The Haunted Vagina, How to Eat Fried Furries, Time Pimp, and Death Machines of Death. There's actually a podcast called Bizarro UK, which might be useful to play with your phone. Oh,
Taking a
taking a
photograph
picture.
of the cat.
See, that proves that she's real. You can see her too,
No,
taking a
it's
picture.
like what's its face, like the ghost thing on the TV where they take photographs of
Oh, like
spirits and most haunted.
most purry. But yeah. Moving on. I once found a book in a charity shop called Blokes and Birds, which was literally photographs of men with birds, not women, birds.
Chaffinches.
Yes. Here's a bearded man with a sparrow hawk. Online, I found What Bird Did That? Identifying birds by what they leave on your windscreen. The Bible and Flying Saucers by Barry H. Downing claims that events in the Bible are actually extraterrestrial related, which, I mean, obviously it makes sense. And the Codex Serafinianus seems now to be known as one of the weirdest books ever. Recently came out in a new edition, but it was first created by artist Luigi Serafini in 1981. It's got some fascinating drawings, including a horse with the back end of a caterpillar on wheels, and all the writing is in some made-up language. The Best Fences contains, guess what The Best Fences contains? Not the multiplication table.
It's
Its own weight in thought. No, it contains the best fences. Teach your wife to be a widow. The blurb reads, "It's a simple, realistic fact that husband should spend years teaching his wife to be a widow."
Years.
So I assume that means making her wear black and listen to Morrissey records or something.
I was going to say a goth, but I mean, I don't think the Smiths were goth, really. Maybe The
No,
Cure or
The
something.
Cure,
Yeah.
definitely. Yeah. Really, I mean, it's about teaching her things like taxes and insurance and real estate because, where else are us ladies going to learn it from?
Exactly, yes. They didn't teach you that at etiquette school now, do they?
Well, I mean, I didn't need etiquette school. I was born
Yes, I've
knowing
noticed.
etiquettes. Probably the worst one I found was Helping the Retarded to Know God, which was published in 1969. Lots of the Amazon commenters were rightly shocked. Some of them were a bit more on the unusual side, though. One of them read, "A thick deposit of much help that don't hesitate to get us in the back. It really cuts the proverbial cantaloupe, really big ones. Let's make the fun with the very sexy party cool."
I think that's probably good. They've probably got a computer program.
I think that's translate. That's been put through translate. Yeah. The next commenter, I thought, actually made a fairly decent point. Why would a disabled child need a genocidal, primitive, imaginary friend with an attention whore complex? You know, something to think about there.
Every disabled child does need one of those.
Anyway. Freaky film club, freaky film club, they are freaky in your face. We watched... What did we watch?
We watched the...
The saddest music in the world by Guy Maddin. It's actually one of my favourite films anyway. I brought it round for us to watch today.
So great that you forgot what it was called.
Oh no, I am on quite heavy painkillers. So that's my excuse.
And I'm all dinnery, that's my excuse.
Yes, and he's all dinnery. He's a modern director, but he makes films in the style of German Expressionist, which, if you don't know what German Expressionist is, you should find out, because they are good.
I like them because they are good.
I like them because they are good. And that is my films critiques of the year.
Who are you? Mark Kermode?
Yeah, that's how Mark Kermode should do it. But anyway... There are other films that are modern but sort of go do the expressionist style. There's an Argentinian film called La Antena, which is very pretty.
Oh, yeah.
And there's another film of Guy Maddin's called Careful. Actually, he's done quite a few films in that style, but The Saddest Music in the World and Careful are probably my favourites.
I don't know how Guy Maddin didn't get 5 Oscars now, really, because I mean the amount of work and the real beauty of these films.
Steve said that The Saddest Music in the World has all the beauty and enchantment of old cinema, but the silly humour of modern films, which is true. He's got, like, you don't expect it with something that looks that beautiful,
and you know,
because usually they take themselves quite seriously, but he is really quite funny.
You know, I have to admit to something. I actually watched this with Maddie before about a year ago, and we kind of watched it again today. And I feel that what stood out is the funny dialogue, the really good dialogue, because the first time you watch it, it's just such a bombardment of imagery.
The senses,
that, you know, you kind of, like, the dialogue, you don't really pick up on a lot of the little... the kind of humour aspects. So, really quite... good. I think I'd like to own that film.
Yes,
actually,
definitely, it is one of my favourites. I like it. It is good.
Anyway, we'll cut there and then go into the
it's story time. Story time. Story time.
Story time.
Right. This story is by Kate Northam. That's with an M, not an N. Kate Northam. She doesn't have a website or a Twitter. I think, well, actually, she may have a Twitter, but she's never on there, so it's almost pointless. But you just have to take my word for it, like with the cat, that she does exist.
Okay. I've met her. I can vouch for that.
And he's not just humouring me.
No, it's not Maddie under a pen name.
It's not me under some sort of disguise, like with a fake moustache.
Kate lives... If you want to look Kate up, she's got a boyfriend, so hard luck. And she lives in Bristol.
She lives in Bristol. Yeah. It was a normal day when I ruined everything. The trees were that shitty bit between autumn and winter, and even the cars seemed like they were cold, and I saw you, not far away, standing in front of our office. It was normal, and everything was different. All the people were holding cardboard cups, yet nobody was drinking them, and you were holding a gun. In the milky light, smartphones were silently unlocked as they started to notice you, and all breathed at once when you smiled and waved at me. I hadn't stopped walking, happy enough to see you ignore the confusion. When I reached you, it was like the rifle, almost out of place, just for being a rifle. wasn't even there. Can I borrow your phone? Only my lips were still smiling, but I handed it to you. Apparently you know my passcode now, and there it is. A good morning text, more X's and O's than anything, and a name that wasn't yours. And a chat history I haven't wiped in 4 days, but it's still enough. You point at me like the handset is so heavy your arm can't make it, and I'm looking you right in the eye, shaking my head when the bullet goes through, and through my hand, bores through my long intestine and out of my back. It's too loud and too quiet at once, and it takes 1,000 years in a blink, but then the second one smashes a rib and makes pulp of my liver and sticks in the fancy 21st birthday mirror in my handbag, a gift I received only 3 years ago. You don't understand, you really don't, and as I lay there dying, all I could think of to say was, you'll never meet your baby.
You have been listening to Bizarre, a podcast of the odd, the art, and the rest. Any questions or comments, email bizarrecast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.